The idea running through this morning's programme is animals that don't fit, or at least don't fit conveniently with what we want to do. Anyone buying a racehorse probably only ever plans on it winning, but that is something that only ever happens to half of all racehorses. And as many as a fifth of foals that are born will never see a racecourse, never mind win a race. 4 months ago, we all saw another RTE Investigates programme about the horses that didn't fit and the treatment that they received at the Shannonside Foods Abattoir in Strafford, County Kildare. Again, it was very far from a pretty picture, and it raised big and uncomfortable questions about an ugly reality hidden from the view of the winner's enclosure at a race meeting. But for the second time this morning, there is another way. A way to make a better fit for horses that are too slow to race or those who have ended their racing career.
This maggot. This is a horse called John Leaper. He is a six-year-old.
Are you going to eat that, are you?
Yeah.
Are you going to eat me now?
By Frankel.
Now, Frankel, people who don't follow racing need to know, is one of the legends of the sport.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very impressive bloodline.
His pedigree is incredible. So I was fortunate enough to get a call to see if I'd take him to retrain him, and here he is.
And how has he been?
Yeah, he's been good. A lot of change for him, you know. He was
among the 12 horses that Jamie Buckley keeps in her livery yard outside Rattoath, County Meath. Four are ex-racehorses at different stages along the way to being retrained as riding horses. In the next stable, Woody, Woodland Opera, formerly trained by Jessica Harrington, a handsome big fella who has proven the point about a thoroughbred's ability to reinvent themselves in middle age.
Well, Woody has had some very, very good days so far. He's Balmoral champion, reserve champion in Dublin last year, and has done a lot of jumping and working hunter.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah, he has a good CV now to date.
And what did it take to get him from running very fast in circles to going over coloured fences in a show jumping arena?
A lot of trust the process, a lot of time and patience. I suppose the National Hunt guys, they know how to jump, so it's slowing the brain down and just slowing everything down with them. So with Woody, when I got him, I spent an awful lot of time hacking and lunging and long reining, just to slow him down out of the fast pace that he would have been used to.
As Jamie tacks him up, Woody is all but asleep, challenging that perception of thoroughbreds as wired and really only a fit for an experienced jockey.
Jamie, what do you say to the people who say thoroughbreds too flighty to be a riding horse for a novice or an inexperienced rider?
I would say that there's a horse out there probably for everyone, in the sense of you have to be careful with the type of horse you're going to pick, first of all, down to rider capability. But there are some thoroughbreds that are really quiet and almost lazy. Their brain works 10 times quicker maybe than a regular horse or an Irish draft or something a little bit more laid back.
But that's it. They are thinkers,
yeah.
Which means that they're learners, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, oh, 100%.
So when you look at the big yards and you see, you know, 100-plus horses there, as they come to the end of their career, what's your best guess as to how many of those you would be able to retrain?
Well, I suppose that all depends on the horse injuries, what kind of way the horse has of going, but I would say probably 90% of them.
That many?
Yeah.
Okay, so
To be retrained in some aspect of being a riding horse. They're not going to all go out and be Dublin horses or Balmoral horses, but they could be a happy hack for somebody. They could be a riding club horse, and some of them can go on to be even competitive show jumping horses.
Yeah. 90% of the horses, mostly destined for the scrap heap, slaughter, at the end of their racing careers, could be repurposed, in the opinion of someone with considerable experience of doing just that. I was curious to see if someone running a racing yard would agree. So I went 15 minutes down the road to the yard of leading trainer Gavin Cromwell.
The majority of them are very intelligent. You can see the ones that have been retrained, there's some of them have gone on to compete and they are certainly very intelligent.
Realistically though, running a yard like this, there's a huge number of moving parts. You're very busy. Are you going to be able to identify the animal for rehoming, retraining, find them a home? I mean, that's a lot of work.
Well, we could definitely identify the ones that would, you know, I mean, we're looking at them every day of the week, so we know the ones that, you know, that would be suitable. Being actually able to go to the next stage is quite difficult, and that's where somebody or some organisation to control this would be very helpful.
Something supported by the Department of Agriculture, is that what you mean?
Yeah, or supported by the industry. I mean, I appreciate that this would need funding, but I think it's something that everybody could contribute to.
Does it require a bit of a mindset change as well? Because if I buy a racehorse, I'm thinking about my day in the paddock at Leopardstown or at Fairy House. I'm not thinking about that animal being retrained to become a dressage horse.
Yeah, you have a good point there.
And I might not be willing to invest in that, is what I mean.
Yeah, I don't think it's probably not on anybody's mind, but maybe it's something that needs to be.
We talked while Gavin drove up and down the length of his gallops watching that morning's training. There's 150 stables in his yard, all of them full at the moment. How many did he think might realistically make riding horses?
I do appreciate it is a big ask, but I think it's not something that is impossible. It would take a good bit of work and organisation, but I think it's something that needs to be looked at.
And what do you think that it might, in best case scenario, identify? Would it be like 10, 15, 20% of horses that could go on to become something else?
Oh, I'd say well in excess of that. I would have said it would be more than 50%. Definitely, of the horses that we have come through our hands, I can't.
Okay.
I would be putting that kind of a number on it.
Towards the line, it is Galopin de Shaw. Three lengths clear. Jerry Colomb, Corrad Rambler is now tired, but Galopin de Shaw will round off a great week for Willie Mullins.
Racing enjoys massive support from its fans, but its critics are growing in number and in influence too. And refusal to take lifetime responsibility for a horse can only strengthen their argument. Increasingly, there are more thoughtful voices within the racing industry that recognise they need to find ways of turning people like Jamie Buckley's passion into part of the profession.
Like, if you had said to me 5 years ago, standing here, you'll be parading as a reserve champion around the main ring in Dublin, I wouldn't have believed you. It was a dream for me to always ride in Dublin, but how was I going to do that when I'm not born and bred into horses? I don't have the funding behind me to be able to do it. But Woody has taken me on that journey.
Listening to Jamie and Gavin, there are two well-known figures in the bloodstock industry who join me in studio now. John Osborne, a vet and head of equine welfare at Horse Racing Ireland, and Caoimhe Doherty, who manages Fornaught Stud for the Smurfit family, but who is also the co-founder of Tro Ella, a not-for-profit that finds better fits for thoroughbreds at the end of their careers. Caoimhe, have I done Tro Ella justice there? Give me your 25 words or less pitch for what it is you do.
Yeah, I think you. Well, actually, to be honest, I think Jamie's hitting the nail on the head there. Troella was founded just to, you know, look at these horses in a second career and encourage it. We have three pillars that we're built on: connect, support, and promote. Connecting horses with new homes, supporting them in their future careers, and promoting the versatility, the athleticness. Just, you know, the thoroughbred is a wonderful animal, temperament-wise, athletic, in athleticism, and they're the ideal horse to go on and do more with.
Gavin's figure of 50%, Jamie's figure of 90%, obviously those are aspirational kind of figures. Realistically, how many of the horses currently in training are currently going to find their way to a new home?
So I think there's been a massive shift maybe in the past 2 or 3 years. It's really hard to put a number on it. as I said, you know, Troela, we don't manually hold any of these horses, but we have over 800 X-race horses registered with Troela now. So that's in some shape or form that they are in a second career, whether it's happy hacking or eventing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's how long is a piece of string? It's putting the supports in place, the structures in place to make sure that these horses can go on and do more, you know, but while being realistic about their abilities as well.
And talk to me about that, putting the supports and the structures in place. This is an idea which everybody agrees has time has come, and it is a proper response to the welfare crisis. But is everybody doing more than just paying the idea lip service? I mean, are they actually putting their hands in their pockets?
Yeah, like when I think of where Troela started and where we are now, Troela was created originally just to be a website. And now look at what it's doing. Look at the, you know, look at the numbers that we have. And I think that's a good testament to the industry as well. We're completely industry funded. You know, we go around with our, you know, hand out looking for that money. And I think people have realised now that Troela, you know, the system works and they're very happy to support it. And I think that mind shift has really changed in the past 2 or 3 years.
But what is needed? How much more money to effectively professionalise what people like Jamie Buckley are doing?
Yeah, so look, I don't know how you would put an exact figure on it. But I suppose they have to make sure that these horses, you know, that they can afford to do it and, you know, pay their way. So one of the things that we've done is we've offered, you know, a huge amount of prize money so that these individuals who are competing the X-race horses, that they can go out and they can put some money in their pockets every week and hopefully pay their way. But at the end of the day, we all know horses are expensive. And again, I don't think that it should just be up to one body to fund this. Mm. When you buy a horse, you know, you take on that responsibility, and that responsibility just does not stop when the horse doesn't race anymore. So I kind of feel a little bit frustrated sometimes because people will say, well, you know, Troela should be funding it, or Horse Racing Ireland should be funding it. If you buy a horse, you need to remember that you need to support it.
John, what do you think? Is this something that the entire industry should pay for, given that it's only going to be a solution for a portion of the horses? Or is it exclusively the responsibility of the owner of the horse?
Well, when you say the industry, like it's a vast industry. There are 10,000 people going to work this morning on a Saturday to care for the horses. And, you know, what happens is that, you know, we work on a stimulus basis. So, you know, Horse Racing Ireland tries to create an ecosystem in which people are stimulated to do, you know, their own spending. So like when we put up prize money, for example, that leads to a multiple of hundreds of millions of invested by people who to participate in the sport, you know. So I suppose the Troela model is to create demand by creating vehicles where people can, having been educated in the retraining process, can then participate in the sport itself. Like the Jamie mentioned, the RDS show class at the horse show, which is something that HRI has been supporting through ITM for over a decade now. And it's the centrepiece of this kind of pursuit in the summer, you know.
Let's talk, though, about what might happen if you don't get these end-of-life solutions in place. Because, like, I mean, as I said earlier on, opinion polling shows, attendances at race meetings show that racing is ever more popular with its supporters. But it's also skating on thin ice with those people that don't like it. Are you aware in Horse Racing Ireland of the extent of that feeling? Are you worried about it?
You know, we're constantly gauging support. It's still the second biggest attended sport in Ireland. You know, it's still thankfully extremely popular and globally interconnected. Like, I mean, there are countries all over the world which look to Ireland for leadership on this front.
The reason I ask, though, is how many more welfare crises, how many more primetime investigates can the racing industry weather before public opinion changes?
We'd like to think that, you know, the positives of it far outweigh the individual instances where people let us down, if you like. And, you know, one of the things about this entire argument is how, you know, it erodes that feeling among our workforce who, it's not their lived experience. Like, care for horses is at the centre of everything that we do. And, you know, I really feel for the people, as I say, who spend their lives in this industry, you know, providing a standard of care for our horses, which is, you know, off the charts in the animal kingdom in terms of what, how we look after them. And, you know, my sympathy is with them particularly, because sometimes when bad incidences are highlighted, and if you like, over highlighted, some would argue that it overlooks the great good work that's done daily by everybody looking after the horses, you know, throughout their lives.
I know,
and
but
it's a quality of life thing, you know.
We all get judged on the things that we do wrong, not the things that we get right. From your point of view, Caoimhe, and the conversations that you're having in the industry, I wonder, to what extent do you think that there's a salutary tale coming across the water from Britain at the moment? The Labour government is about to ban drag hunting, not fox hunting. That's already gone. The non-blood sport alternative is now possibly going to go. That's something that was probably unthinkable to most people in that sport 20 or 30 years ago. Do you think that it's possible we might end up seeing a realignment of public opinion and political policy if there are more welfare scandals?
Yeah, when I think about this all the time, and think about myself personally, and, you know, I'm a grassroots amateur rider. I love horses. And I think there's such a gap between the people that love horses and the people who don't understand them. And I think, you know, to look at hunting and racing and what it does for people, I mean, it's so short-sighted. Just because you don't understand a sport or you don't understand someone's way of life, you can't just ban it. And you know, and as John said, like...
But it is the welfare crises that undermine the faith of the vast majority of people.
You know, but welfare crisis, I mean, there's, as John said, we've seen some bad actors. But what we see on a day-to-day basis is not a welfare crisis. You know, when I get up, I work 7 days a week. I get up at 6 o'clock to do my horses before I go to work. I do horses all day long. You know, that's not a welfare issue. It's a lack of understanding.
I used the wrong word there, in fairness. It's not welfare crisis. It's welfare individual scandals. To that end, John, since Shannonside Foods has been closed down, there isn't an outlet, is there, for the dignified euthanizing of these animals at the end of their life? What's being done?
No, that's not true. I mean, there has always been the, if you like, the preferred option, which is euthanasia by your local vet and disposal through the rendering facilities, which are countrywide. No pun intended. So that has always been available. It has been preferred by most people because...
Okay, but does the absence of Shannonside led to sort of a choke point in the system?
Well, the difficulty is that not everybody is in a position where the, you know, the several hundred euros that is involved in, you know, the euthanasia and disposal route, you know, that's not available to some people in the horse sector. And I've always been careful not to advise policy which excludes certain pockets of activity, and that's why we never, let's say, felt that an abattoir should be something we were negative towards, but we prefer the euthanasia plus disposal option, but we recognise the fact that that's not available to everybody for financial reasons.
Should the state, should the Department of Agriculture step in and create and run a facility like that?
I believe, and I can't speak for them, but I believe that talks are in a reasonably advanced stage towards the reintroduction of an abattoir service, which, I believe it would be a useful addition, and it's something that I think that we should have on the island because we shouldn't think that we can export our problem, you know.
Talking to owners, one of the big reservations that they have about engaging with services like Troella or with the idea of retraining or rehoming is that there's no guarantee for them that that animal isn't going to be sold on and that their name isn't going to end up potentially getting dragged through the mud as part of a welfare case or an abuse case down the line. What can be done to solve that particular problem, John?
This is an interesting, as Caoimhe used the phrase, like a change in attitude that's happening in recent times. And I think that's coming home to everybody, that, you know, the care of the animal is a reputational risk for people, and we've seen that, you know, so people are careful how they engage with the aftercare service, and that's one of the aspirations I think Troella is trying to achieve, which is that it's a trusted trader sort of environment where they know who you're dealing with and they know, if you like, the rules of engagement, if you like. That's formalised in France, for example, as a charter system, so that the farms which engage in the retraining process in France work on the basis of a charter system where the animal cannot be subsequently traded on. It must return to the originator and maybe find a different route through the charter system. That's something we might explore.
Does that sound like a fit for you, Caoimhe?
Yeah, I suppose one of the things that we've seen, actually, and we've seen it with horses that have come through the Troella system, if you like, that, you know, a lot of the individuals taking part, you know, that they get horses to a certain level and then there's a market for them now. You know, we've seen it particularly eventing. So a lot of these horses, you know, they get to a certain stage and they're ready to go to a next stage and they're ready to be moved on and traded on. And these horses have, you know, so much potential that is happening. And we can't rule that out either, I don't think.
All right. But maybe the French charter system is one to look at and see if we can copy. Caoimhe Doherty from Troella, thank you very much. And John Osborne of Horse Racing Ireland as well.